This is The Extra, your number one source to stay connected with what's happening in Southern Colorado. Now, here is your host, Andrew Rogers.
Welcome into KRDO News Radio. It's The Extra. I'm your host, Andrew Rogers. Joining me today on The Extra is retired Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann talking about his new book, Operation Pineapple Express. And Scott, thank you so much for joining us here on KRDO News Radio.
Andrew, thank you for having me, and it is awesome to be in Colorado Springs.
Absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about, first off, the operation itself, Operation Pineapple Express, and what led to the idea to chronicle this and get this out into a published book.
Yeah, so thanks for asking that. I wrote this. It was not a book I intended to write, nor was it a book really that I wanted to write. And mainly the reason for that is because it chronicles, or the context is, the collapse of Afghanistan. And that was a theater of war that I had fought in as a Green Beret for, you know, quite a few rotations, quite a few deployments. And so watching that country collapse, seeing my friends left behind, and the pain that it caused the veteran and active duty population and military families was extremely, extremely difficult, on top of the suffering of our Afghan partners. So I decided to write this book because I did not feel like the story was being told of what really happened over there during August of 2021 and the exodus that occurred. And I wanted to tell that story from the street level, from the ground level of the Afghan point of view and the veterans who supported them.
And you said that this really wasn't a book that you intended to write. So what was, you know, that kind of deciding point to really say, look, this narrative isn't what's actually being portrayed, and we need to get the actual, you know, story out there?
Well, like so many veterans, whether you're a Vietnam veteran or a veteran of Just Cause or a veteran post 9/11, I was retired. I'd been retired for 10 years. I run a leadership company. I teach storytelling to veterans as a transition skill. I'd moved on. Mm-hmm. You know, I had put a lot of this war behind me. And like so many veterans, it's something that we're eager to do any way that we can. It's not always easy. We want to put, and I frankly did not like the way things were going in Afghanistan when I retired in 2013. And so I was ready to move on. And so, you know, when I looked at the way this was going down, when I looked at the way it was being characterized by institutional leaders, I'm not just talking about the Biden administration. I think both parties squarely own this, but also diplomats and senior military officers. It was just as if we were turning the page on a 20-year relationship that we had fought and bled for, because of the way we had been attacked on 9/11/2001, because of the way that al-Qaeda had been able to establish safe haven in Afghanistan and there was no partner force, there was no local force to stand against them, and therefore they hit us with that big attack. And we spent two decades building this capability only to just walk away from it, Andrew, to just abandon it in a matter of hours. And that did not seem right to me. It seemed like it was a moral injury on our veteran population, and more importantly, was putting the country at risk. So I approached this as a storyteller. Rather than write a military book, I wanted to write a book that told the story from the lens of the people who had to crawl through those sewage canals, brave those crowds where children were trampled, and sit at the breakfast table with those veterans on their phones trying to figure out a way to get their friends out. And that's really what this is. It's not a war book. It is about storytelling to help you emotionally connect to a very, very tough situation.
And, you know, going back to August of 2021, I know you used the term even yourself, you were ready to, you know, move on, put that page behind us. But speaking with so many veterans, especially here in the Southern Colorado community, we have such a large tie. I don't really think, you know, there's ever a way to really move on from that, as we saw so many of those emotions and what you'd even just brought up really got brought right back to the forefront, like it or not, seeing just those disturbing images of people clinging to airplanes just trying desperately to get out.
I couldn't agree with you more, and there is such a strong veteran population here, to include my brothers and sisters in the Special Forces community, but also, you know, just a strong infantry presence and with the Air Force Academy. But what I will say is that so many, there's like 775,000 service members who served in Afghanistan. And there's a recent poll that was done in October or November of 2021 that said 73% of those veterans feel betrayed by this decision to abandon Afghanistan and the way it went down, and 67% feel humiliated. There's been, according to some reports, an 81% spike in calls to the VA hotline since August of 2021. And so I tell you all that because a lot of the people who served in this community, who served in Afghanistan, I am sure experienced some level of distress and just emotional heartbreak when they saw the way that this went down, because we fought, we bled over there, we traded our youth in, we lost our friends. Some folks lost their limbs and incurred injuries. But the point is, and here's, this is key, the way that veterans and active duty members stepped up to honor a promise to their Afghan allies when institutional leaders didn't, I think is so representative of the of just the power and leadership that the military community represents, even in hard times. And that's what this book's about.
Absolutely. And we all know that old phrase that hindsight, of course, is 20/20. But a lot of this was pretty well predictable, even seeing, you know, what led up to that August of 2021. So in your mind, as somebody who spent so many tours overseas, spending time with the military services and the Afghan military, what should have been done to get out but not leave it in such a vacuum?
Yeah, the way that I come at this is I try to avoid the political jargon and all of that you see in a lot of these books. And it's really, I tell the story through the lens of Afghans who lived it. And one of the characters in this book is a character named Bashir. And he was an Afghan commando, Afghan Special Forces. He even went to our Special Forces qualification course, Andrew, in Fort Bragg. And in seeing his story and how things fell apart, he fought to the very last bullet on August 15th, killed 12 Taliban on the day Kabul was overrun with just a handful of people who held on. And when you see how his story and how those final months unfolded in Afghanistan, it's going to make you angry because you'll see just how much he and his brothers fought and carried the loads. Over 60,000 Afghans killed in action in this war. And, you know, it was predictable. It could have been avoided. We could have still left that country with and put a residual force in place, avoided a Taliban takeover, and more importantly, avoided the abandonment of the allies who stood with us for 20 years.
Absolutely. I'm joined by retired Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, a former Green Beret, the author of Operation Pineapple Express, kind of talking about and bringing a new perspective to that pullout from Afghanistan back in 2021. We're going to take a short break. We're going to continue talking about the book, the stories in this, much more as we continue on The Extra right here on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra here on KRDO News Radio, joined by Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, a retired Green Beret, the author of Operation Pineapple Express. And Scott, you know, during that first segment, we talked a lot about just that general pullout, that vacuum left in Afghanistan. And when it comes to the book, talk to me a little bit about that title, Operation Pineapple Express, and the meaning behind it.
Yeah, like everything else, it was simply a name that none of us expected that we assigned to our volunteer group. You know, this was not a group that went overseas and did this withdrawal. We did this as mostly veterans, volunteers from our cell phones, leveraging relationships and knowledge of that country. But the name Operation Pineapple Express actually came from passenger number one on that Underground Railroad, one of my best friends, Nizam Nizami, an Afghan commando, who was also Afghan Special Forces and U.S. Special Forces trained. Andrew, he was shot through the face years back defending U.S. Special Forces on a patrol, turning to warn them of an ambush. He took a round right through the face and within 3 weeks was back in the fight. He was wounded multiple times by ISIS. And what I can tell you is that when, you know, he spent almost 7 years in nonstop combat against ISIS and the Taliban, and when he texted me, we stayed in touch over the years, even after I retired. And as Kabul started to collapse in early summer, he was hiding in his uncle's house in Kabul like Anne Frank. He was getting texts from the Taliban, and they were peering in his window. And as things fell apart, he texted me on Signal, and he said, "I'm not afraid to die. I just don't want to die alone." And that, for me, was the ultimate kind of slap in the face in all of this, because everything that we had invested in that country, or I had invested, seemed to hang in the balance of whether this young man lived or died. And it just seemed that nobody else was coming. So reached out to a handful of volunteers, Green Berets who had worked with him before, a couple of Washington insiders, and we started helping him move through the city, his eyes and ears dropping pins where the Taliban checkpoints were, getting vehicles to move him, and ultimately calling inside the perimeter at this crowd of thousands to try to find somebody who would let him in. It just so happened in the final moments, as his phone was at 10% power, he had compromised his safe house and was out in the open where the Taliban were looking for him, that he had no paperwork, that we got in touch with a diplomat named JP, told him the story about Nizam and how he had gone through special forces, defended Green Berets, and he said, you know what, I was a Green Beret before I was a diplomat. We got to take care of our own. They're going to throw him out if he doesn't say the code word pineapple. So tell him to say pineapple as loud as he can. So we're screaming for him to say that. And he does, and they pulled him through. And that became Task Force Pineapple. And then the Underground Railroad that we built after that, that we constructed leveraging an open sewage canal leading to a four-foot hole in the fence where hundreds were pulled through after that, became known as the Pineapple Express.
And, you know, stories like this were all too common is really you spent so many years overseas working with these members of the Afghan forces or the translators who spent a lot of time and, you know, yeah. really, you know, put their lives on the line helping the American and the allied efforts. And they were almost seemed to be the first ones thrown out. And
right.
I'm sure this isn't the only story, but when it comes to that kind of feeling of abandonment, you mentioned that the volunteer forces come together rallying around from overseas, but that just goes to that larger picture of that camaraderie and that brotherhood built over decades of time overseas.
Well, and I think it represents what's best in America, too. You know, I would ask your listener this, is what does a promise to a friend mean to you? And how far would you go to honor it? Because those are the two questions that I asked the individuals that I interviewed for this book and that were part of Task Force Pineapple. It was the question that I had to ask myself in a moment where I had to decide, do I want to get sucked back into this crap? You know, because I really didn't, if I'm being honest. I didn't want to get involved with the government again. I sure didn't want to get involved with the Afghanistan campaign again. But if you think about it, if we as humans, as civilians, made a habit of abandoning our friends the way the United States has done to its allies since Vietnam, the Montagnards in Vietnam, the Kurds in Syria, the Iraqi military and police in Iraq, the most recently the Afghan commandos and interpreters in Afghanistan. I mean, you're talking about a multi-generational habit of walking away from your friends when it gets hard. And what if we did that with our friends? I mean, how would we navigate the world? How would we be thought of? And that's really the way I came at this book. And the way that I tried to tell these stories.
And as you've been putting together this book and you've working to tell this story and again getting that, you know, kind of ground level, boots on the ground
yeah.
story out, not just what's being shown on television, what's been the response from those that you've served with?
You know, it's been really amazing. The general officers and the admirals don't like it too much. The politicians don't like it too much. And the diplomats don't, the senior
Shocker.
Diplomats. Yeah, right? But let me tell you who loves it. The men and women who stood up for this country over the 20-year war. And also, you know, the first week it came out, Andrew, we had no resources, no money, no pre-existing brand. Instant New York Times bestseller. The first week it came out, it hit the New York Times bestseller list. And I can only attribute that to the fact that the stories contained in this book land on the chest cavity of every American who reads it or who listens to the audiobook that I read. And that's the only thing I can figure out. The response has been overwhelming.
Well, and again, as you mentioned, it's not just your typical war novel.
It's not,
you know, really even something that can just be correlated to people with military experience. As you mentioned, it's a story about that level of friendship and upholding promises, which is
Absolutely.
Universally connectable.
Absolutely. And it's not a political book. It's not a Democrat or a Republican. It's about, you know, when I went back and looked at the chat room and Signal, mm-hmm. tens of thousands of entries from various constituents in Task Force Pineapple, very diverse, different political opinions. The word Biden was mentioned once. Trump was never mentioned. It wasn't about that. It was about focusing and doing the right thing. And I think that's what resonates with people.
Well, and again, that just goes to show, you know, that resolve of the men and women who have served the country wearing the uniform, that yep. it isn't a partisan thing. It's very much task-oriented and getting the job done and partially making sure that that job gets done no matter what the other part of getting the job entails.
And it's just one thing, as you say, that was our Pineapple Express. And what I say to people at the end of the book, and I don't think I'm giving anything away, is what's your Pineapple Express? You know, we need that kind of, I think, volunteer leadership in this country today that bridges beyond partisan divides, that bridges beyond rigid ideology, and looks at the problem for what it is and just steps into the arena and says, nobody's coming. I'll lead it. Let's go. And I think that's what really resonated with Americans in this story.
Absolutely. Again, talking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann about the book Operation Pineapple Express. Scott, as we head on to break, where could people get more information, maybe purchase the book or the audiobook?
Yeah, I would love for people to go to scottmann.com because there's a ton of stuff there. It's on Amazon. You can get the Audible. I read it myself, 21 characters that I embody. But also, if you go to scottmann.com, there's a ton of stuff there that we're doing, not just for the Afghan people, but for veterans as well. And you can find the book and the audio book there.
Absolutely. Well, we're continuing this conversation. We have to step aside for a quick check of local and national headlines. We have much more with Scott Mann, author of Operation Pineapple Express, still ahead here on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. I'm Andrew Rogers, joined by Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, a retired Green Beret, the author of Operation Pineapple Express. And Scott, we talked a lot about, you know, what's been going on, that pullout from Afghanistan. And even still, years removed, what are some of the biggest misconceptions you've heard from people as far as how everything ended following the longest conflict we've had as an American army?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. I think there's a couple of things. Is first of all, why does Afghanistan matter? Why do we care? You know, we spent 20 years there. If we couldn't get it sorted out by then, what's the point? And this is the first thing I will tell you. And everything that I'm about to tell you speaks to the reason that veterans got involved so quickly, because veterans know this because they fought there and they gave their youth and so much there. One is Afghanistan was the origin location for the worst terror attack in American history. The post 9/11 commission and all of the work that was put into walking that down and finding out what happened was you had an unfettered, uninterrupted sanctuary of Al-Qaeda and other groups where they were allowed to train, plan, project this attack. And there was no antibody to stand up against them locally. We did not have a ground presence, an intelligence network. So we spent 20 years building that. We bled our sons and daughters, many people from this location, fought to do that. Not only did we keep Al-Qaeda at bay for 20 years, which is no small thing, but we also built an emerging partner force that was well on its way to being the long-term antibody to not just Al-Qaeda, but 21 other violent extremist groups in that region. Then we just walked away from it. What that did was it created a reputation in the world. Who's going to want to partner with the U.S. in times of duress when we treat our allies like that? What about the commandos and special forces that we trained and could potentially be co-opted by ISIS and Al-Qaeda? And what if we have to go back over there after a catastrophic attack again on the homeland, and this time we're going to be facing down commandos and special forces that we trained who have an axe to grind?
Not to mention the fact that we've done this once before. I mean, yes, we were doing this back in the Reagan administration, using Afghanistan kind of as that tool between us and the Soviets.
Right. We may be done with Afghanistan, but Afghanistan is not done with us. And the way that we walked away from this country with just an isolated political decision and no attempt to preserve the forces that we had fought to build was a mistake that's not only going to haunt us, it's going to follow us home, I fear. And this is really why I want people to read this book and why it's so important that we not just honor the commitment that we made to the Afghan people, but that we recognize the national security implications as we roll into a midterm election, regardless of your politics, knowing and understanding that if we pretend that Afghanistan didn't happen and the way we left didn't happen, and put our head in the sand, my fear is this one's going to follow us home with another catastrophic attack and a need to go back into that country from less than zero of where we were last time. And it's going to be very painful.
And again, you know, this isn't a political book. And you even said, even when you were putting this together in the task force, really not even a lot of political discussions, but you brought up, you know, kind of keeping these things in mind ahead of November. So specifically, what are some of the things that you would urge people to maybe consider as they head out to the ballot box?
Yeah, look, I would say here's a couple of things. Is one is, why have we not had any public hearings on this? I think that's inexcusable. And we've had one public hearing since all of this happened. Congress needs to hold public hearings on this. And the veterans and the Gold Star families who sacrificed in this 20-year war, they deserve to hear what happened in that war, not just with the long war and the mistakes that were made under all administrations, and there were plenty, but also the way this abandonment went down. It was poorly constructed. It was bad policy. And it's put the United States at risk from a national security level. What is that risk? And what assurances can we give to the veteran population that this won't happen again. We have a massive moral injury on our veterans right now, Andrew, that I think is going to eclipse the Vietnam War. I think when you have 73% of veterans saying they feel betrayed and 67% feel humiliated, and you add that on to 30,177 suicides of active duty veterans and post-9/11 active duty members and post-9/11 veterans, that's the devil's cocktail. And again, we need to look at national security. We need to look at what we can do to set this right with the Afghan people, and what is it doing to our veteran population? That comes from an informed citizenry who looks at their politicians running for office and ask them, call your congressman, are you for hearings to find out what happened so that we can make sure this doesn't happen again? That's not a Republican or Democrat issue. That's an American issue.
And again, it's not just a one call, because we know how our politicians can be sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, I'll say this as a member, you know, of the news media here in Colorado Springs, I can't even get calls back from their schedulers half the time. So it's a continued effort, and it's something that I think gets lost on people, that it has to be continually brought up, because it's so easy just to say, well, yeah, that was a couple years ago. It was 20 years, it's in the past, look at the new bright, shiny issue, but there's still going to be lingering impacts decades down the road if this isn't properly addressed.
I agree. And when you, here's the reason that I wrote the book in the third person. It's not like a first person, this one time at band camp, here's what I did memoir. Mm-hmm. It is in the third person, and it tells the stories of the Afghans who risked everything for freedom and the veterans who stood at their shoulder. And when you read this book or you listen to it on Audible, what I promise you is you're going to have an emotional connection to these stories. You're going to feel it in your chest cavity. And that's what we need, because the way this has been portrayed in the media and in the political realm is that we've just turned the page on it. And we cannot do that to our allies, and we cannot do that to our veterans. So if you care about one or both of those, my recommendation is that you give this book a look, because it tells the story in a human, emotional way that will help you connect to it and make up your own mind.
Absolutely. And again, you mentioned it's also just about those simple ideas of keeping your promises and upholding your word, something that is so universal no matter what your background is, military service or not.
Absolutely. And this is stuff that many of us were taught from a very young age. And I think it represents what we still stand for in this country. Do we believe in a promise to our friends? Do we honor that promise to our friends when it gets hard? Do we believe in the sacrifice of our veterans? Do we take a stand when it comes to national security and violent extremism and working with partners? All of these questions, and how do we navigate the world when things get hard, right? Do we just throw our hands up and say, sorry, it's inconvenient? Or do we step into the arena, recognize that nobody else is coming, and say, okay, I'll do my best. I'll try to lead through this. And that's what these veterans did. And again, I think it's why it resonated so deeply with Americans.
Absolutely. I'm joined by Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, author of Operation Pineapple Express. We have to take one more quick break. We're continuing this discussion on the next side right here on KRDO News Radio's The Extra. Welcome back to The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. I'm Andrew Rogers, joined this entire hour by Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, the author of Operation Pineapple Express. You know, we've talked a lot about the pullout from Afghanistan, what happened, and really we've seen that kind of domino effect when it comes to just the impact that's had on a number of veterans, especially those who served in Afghanistan. And what resources and what should be considered for those veterans moving ahead, knowing just the substantial toll this is still taking?
Yeah, there is there's some surveys out recently, Andrew, that show that it's having a profound effect on the veteran population and the active duty population right here, probably in Colorado Springs, because there are, again, over 775,000 Afghan war veterans. There's over 1 million Iraqi war veterans who this has conjured up, emotional responses, and Vietnam veterans who've had to basically relive Saigon twice when they watched those choppers pulling people out of our State Department and evacuating people. So, you know, I don't think I can overstate the impact that this has had on our military and our Gold Star and military family population. Here's my concern. Is that the political, and I talk about this in the epilogue of the book, but the political leadership on both sides of the aisle, the senior diplomats and the senior military officers at like the 06 level and above in many cases, in my assessment, have turned the page on this as if it didn't happen. And that creates what's called a moral injury. It's a violation of what one knows to be true and what one knows to be the right thing to do, and you violate it. And you either violate it on your own, or you're put in a position where you have to violate it because of the actions of leaders that you once trusted. And in this case, it's the latter. Veterans and active duty members have received a moral injury from the very leaders who we trusted for 20 years, who we put our faith in, who we served loyally, and they made a decision politically to move on and turn the page and abandon our allies. It's a promise that it's an implicit and explicit promise in some cases, that we say, I have your back. I will not leave a partner on the battlefield. We're trained and held to account on that. Now, the order that was given by the president, most generals and admirals will tell you that was a legal order. And I believe it was. But it was also an immoral order. The wholesale abandonment of 20-plus thousand commandos and special forces, guys like Nizam that I told you about who took bullets for us, and then just to leave them with no air power, no contractor support, no plan for resilience, we just walked away from them and shut the book and turned the lights off. And that is an immoral act that is causing all kinds of issues, mental health issues with our veteran population. And I believe we're on the front edge, Andrew, of a tsunami of mental health with our veteran population, if we don't get in front of this, that is going to eclipse the Vietnam generation.
Absolutely. And even, you know, some could say maybe worse than the Vietnam generation, because this was a 20-year engagement with an all-volunteer force. There was no draft with this. This was all men and women putting their lives on the line for their choice. You know, they choose to serve, and this is kind of that repayment. And, you know, we've seen it just, you know, with simple things in Congress now about getting veterans the health care they need. And there's almost a track record of not being able to support the veterans that, you know, by and large, the United States is creating and putting in these situations.
And look at the numbers. Recruiting is down. Retention is down. They're having congressional hearings on what they need to do. And I believe the leaders, the military leaders, are tone deaf. The policymakers are tone deaf. They're looking at this, scratching their heads, going, I don't understand why the numbers are down. The public trust in the military was one of the most trusted institutions in our country, and most social scientists will agree that you need trust in your institutions to survive as a democracy. Mm-hmm. The military was the only one that was really holding strong. Congress has plummeted, the media has plummeted, even law enforcement, but the military throughout the long war stayed in the high 70s. It's now 56%. It dropped 11 points in public trust after the collapse in Afghanistan and the abandonment. Yet, no one's talking about this. And this is a major problem when almost half the country doesn't have trust in the military anymore. So when you think about recruiting, when you think about retention, when you think about the way that our children who are now in the military are led, if we as citizens don't take a stand on this, if we don't demand accountability, public hearings, and a change in this systemic approach to abandonment, then I think that we're going to reap what we sow. And I think Pineapple Express really lays that out.
Exactly. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, I haven't served in the military like you, but this needs to be a deeper conversation than just a simple platitude of thank you for your service or selling a olive green Broncos jersey trying to show support for our veteran community. This needs to be a deeper conversation with much more long-term ramifications.
We need to, and those are, you know, all those programs, those 50-plus thousand veteran programs that support our veterans are great, but here's what we need to remember. When you step back and look at Operation Pineapple Express, Task Force Dunkirk, Team America Relief, all of these hundreds of groups that stepped into the fray, what did they have in common? They were veterans. And I believe that veterans represent the moral compass of our nation. Veterans will step into the fray when nobody else is coming in the darkest of times, and they'll show us what leadership looks like. They'll show us our true north. They always have throughout our existence. But what we're in danger of right now is what my friend Chris Vetzel, an Iraqi war veteran from the 4th ID here in the local area, said to me. He said, you know, I don't even tell people I'm a soldier anymore. It used to be the thing I was most proud of. He was blown up, buried alive in Iraq, and he told his story openly. Now he doesn't tell people because he's embarrassed. When we start to lose this precious social capital that is the leadership of our veterans and our military families, our country is going off a cliff. And that's what we should be thinking about, is how do we get our veterans in the game so they're leading us at home? It's not about the island of misfit toys and taking care of them. It's about them leading us. And if we don't make this right and set this moral injury right, they're just going to recede into the darkness, and it's going to be very hard to get them back.
Absolutely. Scott, as we're approaching the final bit of the show here, what is the biggest takeaway that you want to make sure people are taking away from this story and from our conversation here?
Our best days are still in front of us. The best in America is still in us. Operation Pineapple Express and these other volunteer groups represented that. When they looked around and saw that nobody else was coming, they stepped in and they led. That was our Pineapple Express. And what I would ask each of you, as you look around your arena right now, your community, your PTA, your school, your divided neighborhood, what's your Pineapple Express? Because we need you to lead us in that same way right here at home. It's our only way out, and I hope that people will read the book, listen to it, and take those lessons and lead in their own version of Pineapple Express, because that's what the country needs.
Absolutely. There's so much more information at scottmann.com. That's man with two N's.
Yep.
We appreciate the time. Again, you can get the book on scottmann.com, the audiobook, really wherever books are sold.
It's on Amazon, local bookstores.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, there's so many more resources as well. And Scott, I appreciate your time joining us, and thank you for what you've done here, this really open conversation, your passion for the project, and everything you're going to continue to do as we move on throughout our days and weeks.
Thank you so much, Andrew. And let's remember to check in on our veterans, our active duty, and our military families, because they're hurting right now in this. And let's check in with them and make sure they're doing okay.